This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Penscast Mailbag. I am your host, Gareth Bahana. As always, alongside me is fellow contributing writer over at Pensburg.com and co-host of the Penscast and the Penscast Mailbag. It is Robbie Noggle. Robbie, we don't have much to talk about in terms of the Penguins other than the Penguins-related questions in the mailbag, but it has been quite an entertaining Stanley Cup playoffs thus far. As we now get prepared for the conference final matchups, we know that the Florida Panthers will do battle with the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Vegas Golden Knights will battle either one of the Dallas Stars or the Seattle Kraken. So somebody completely new will win a Stanley Cup this year after the eliminations of the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. It is a very unpredictable Stanley Cup playoffs this year. And boy, it has been interesting, to say the least. But enough about what's happening in the world of the NHL. We are here to answer your questions in this week's mailbag episode. If you'd like to submit a question for a future mailbag episode, you can do so by following the Skating Penguin Network on Twitter at PenguinsFFSN. Every week we will send out a mailbag tweet asking for your participation in these mailbag episodes as we go through the Penguins offseason. And as we do every week, Robbie, you will start us off with question number one, and we will alternate back and forth. And as I noticed as I was putting this outline together last night, Robbie, as we record this on Monday evening, all 16 questions this week come from Brian, who is a regular contributor here at the Skating Penguin Network, the Penscast, and the Penscast Mailbag. So I don't know how Brian had 16 questions on his mind, but we are appreciative nonetheless for Brian's participation in keeping the mailbag afloat. So without further ado, let's get into it. Question number one, and all the further questions come from Brian. Robbie, Brian wants to know, was Ulf Samuelsson a dirty player, and was Ty Domi justified for cleaning his clock? Given I was between the ages of 1 and 4 while Ulf was in Pittsburgh, and seeing his highlights, it seems like he played with a bit of an edge. The Cam Neely knee incident was definitely pretty bad in Brian's estimation.
Ulf is one of those players where you love him on your team, but you absolutely loathe him if he's on anyone else's team. And he is and was beloved in Pittsburgh as a player. again, I think everybody from that era of Penguins hockey is probably beloved in Pittsburgh. Was he dirty? Again, that depends on whether or not he was on your team. The Neely hit, yeah, Boston's still mad about that. But one thing that gets under their skin more than anything is when you tell them that it was absolutely a clean hit. So in my estimation, it's a clean hit. And if Boston's not happy with it, shove it. Don't care. I could see the argument for anyone, not just Hydomi, being justified in cleaning his clock. All playing with an edge is being very, very, very kind to all. He couldn't play in today's game, at least not the style he played. He straight up, if you watch highlights from the early 90s Penguins, he was straight up punching guys in the back of the head. And I know they get away with a lot in front of the net in today's NHL, but not that in today's NHL at all. Brutal cross checks, brutal slashes. He played with an edge, if we're being in the kindest words. And was he dirty? That all depends on your vantage point. Penguins fans, they might begrudgingly say he was dirty. He's dirty by today's NHL standards, but he's beloved in Pittsburgh, and you're going to – very few Penguins fans that remember those years are going to say that Ulf was, quote-unquote, a dirty player. So Ulf is basically, yeah, like I said at the beginning – a guy you love on your team, you die for him, but you absolutely loathe him if he's not. So, yeah, Ulf is all depending on whether or not he played for you. Question number two. Should we be rooting for the Kraken, given half their team is former Penguins?
Hey, you're well within your right to root for anybody you want to root for in these Stanley Cup playoffs, but let's take a look. Let's see. Jared McCann, Brandon Tanev, Justin Schultz, Jamie Oleksiak, I believe Daniel Sprong. Daniel Sprong has sort of rediscovered himself and found his game while in Seattle. So certainly there is a Penguins connection there on the other side of the country in Seattle. As we record this on the evening of May 15th, this is before a puck drop between Game 7 between the Stars and the Kraken. So, boy, what I think I mentioned it on last week's mailbag. What just the unpredictability in this entire Stanley Cup playoff run. You have the Seattle Kraken, who are one win away in their second year of existence from reaching a conference final. The Vegas Golden Knights are going to what is, I think, their fourth conference final in their 6 years of existence. That is absolutely insane. The Florida Panthers, who I mentioned, who got such a bad rap, such a bad reputation over the last 15 to 20 years with a combination of factors that have sort of brought them down, but now they are in the Eastern Conference final against the Carolina Hurricanes. But going back to the Seattle Kraken, I would not be opposed if anyone here in Pittsburgh hopped on the Seattle bandwagon. It really is. It's a fascinating story for an expansion team in their second year to have as much success as Seattle has had. I think I mentioned last week it may only be rivaled by the Vegas Golden Knights and the success that they had early on when they came into the NHL. So to see Vegas and potentially Seattle clash off in the conference final to fight for the Stanley Cup, I'm sure from the league's perspective, they are over the moon with these two, the two most recent expansion teams potentially getting a shot at winning the Stanley Cup. So, yeah, looking at there's a certain Penguins connection in Seattle, and I would not begrudge anybody who wanted to hop on the Seattle bandwagon and root for the newest NHL team to see if they can win Lord Stanley's Cup in their second season. Question number three. Brian says he feels partially responsible for the Pirates' recent decline. Brian says, I should have never said anything on here a few mailbags ago. I think that's when he brought up the recent success that the Pirates had been sustaining. Robbie and Brian both know that I've made my discontent for the Pirates no secret, and how they have been. It's not like it doesn't bring me joy that they've fallen back down to earth, because I believe the city is a lot more lively in the summer when the Pirates are successful. But Brian or Robbie, this is your question. I know you're a big baseball guy. How you look at the Pirates and how they've sort of fallen back down to earth after that hot start, the best team in the majors, and now they just beat the Orioles the other day to get a win after losing, I think they're 1-9 in their last 10 games. So, Robbie, what do you make of the Pittsburgh Pirates after that hot start?
Well, I'm certainly holding Ryan responsible. He doesn't need to feel partially responsible. Ryan should feel fully responsible for the Pirates' decline. In April, they were playing above their head. I think they're a 500 ball club, right around there. So I think they've kind of come back a little bit to right where they are. Though I will say that they are currently mired in the worst offensive stretch in 115 years. So you can even throw out the years they are really bad back in the early 2000s. They're in a historic dry spell offensively. So if they can fix that, I think they can stay in the wild card picture as long as it all breaks their way. And they're lucky they're playing in a division that's not great. So they're going to be able to kind of inflate themselves record wise a little bit, just playing in a bad division. But I mean, overall, Brian, you're not allowed to talk about the Pirates until at least the 4th of July. So if I'm instructing Garrett, if you ask a Pirates question between now and the 4th of July, he cannot include it in the mailbag. So, Brian, I hope you feel bad. But please keep asking us questions every week related to the Penguins because you keep us in business, which we really appreciate. So moving on, again, every question from Brian this week. So Brian wants to know, Garrett, your thoughts on the Snoop Dogg ownership group bid being interested in buying the Ottawa Senators.
I'm all for it. I love the thought of the dog father, D-O-double-G, owning a piece of the Ottawa Senators. He has made his fandom of the NHL and professional hockey no secret. He is certainly a big fan. This Snoop Dogg news comes in combination, in tandem with the prospect of Ryan Reynolds potentially buying the Ottawa Senators. However, it has since been reported that the group that Ryan Reynolds was in has pulled out of the bidding process for the Senators' ownership. So Ryan Reynolds is allegedly no longer part of that process to buy the Senators, whereas Snoop Dogg and his ownership group, let me pull up my notes here, Snoop Dogg and the Necco Sports Group, I believe what they are calling themselves, that is the part of the group. Snoop Dogg is part of the Necco Sparks Sports Group that is preparing to make a bid on the Senators. And as I was doing research for this question and looking into Snoop Dogg and his involvement, I came across an article from just today, from May 15th. This was published at 12:15 a.m. Eastern on Sportsnet's website. The Necco Sparks bid is apparently offering First Nations groups in Canada an equity stake in the Ottawa Senators' ownership. So if you're not familiar, First Nation groups in Canada are, I believe, the Indigenous Canadian peoples who were obviously there on the continent and in what is now considered Canada before Europeans came over and settled in what is now known as Canada. So First Nations peoples are getting a seat at the table. This is not a token involvement, as what the article states. This is, quote, giving First Nations peoples a seat at the table, end quote. So it remains to be seen how big of an equity stake that these Indigenous groups could be given. But I will say this is all related to Snoop Dogg's potential involvement in the NHL. His group, the Necco Sparks bid, final bids were expected today, on Monday, the day we record this podcast, for the ownership of the Ottawa Senators. So there could be news of a sale announcement or something of the sort as early as Wednesday, which would be the 17th. So it looks like this process is wrapping up rather quickly, and we should know in short order who will become the new owners of the Ottawa Senators, and it very well could be Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg could be the public face of this ownership group and leading a sort of a new charge in a Canadian market in Ottawa. Will the Senators get a new arena? They certainly have a lot of young talent to be building around there, so it could be an exciting time if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, and we'll just have to wait and see who will be declared the winner of this bidding process. and who will take the majority ownership of the Ottawa Senators? Question number five. Here's a fun question for you, Robbie. What is the greatest logo of all time? Now, Brian doesn't specify, but he says the Hartford Whalers has his vote. So it could be in all of sports, I guess, since this is a hockey podcast. Maybe he's talking about NHL logos. But, Robbie, what is the greatest logo of all time?
Yeah, if you're going all sports, we could do multiple podcasts just on that. But from a hockey standpoint, the Whalers is obviously a great choice. I personally, if I'm looking at defunct hockey teams, I'm a big believer in the Quebec Nordiques, either the fleur-de-lis or the standard logo that everybody's familiar with. A team that's still functioning, they don't use this logo full-time anymore, but I have to go with the Vancouver Canucks flying skate logo from the 90s with the black, the yellow, the red. Just a flawless logo. They need to wear it more. It's unfortunate they don't, but a really phenomenal logo. I love it. It's one of my favorites, and I'm so glad they at least brought it back in a third jersey kind of way. But another one that's great, and it kind of goes, you kind of need the colors to go with it, but I think a lot of people, especially my age, resonate with it. It's the old Mighty Ducks logo. Growing up with the movies and with Disney's tie-in, just it's really unfortunate they have the boring Webfoot Ducks word mark now, but the old with the duck goalie mask and the hockey sticks, it's so good. It's so good. And I'm going to stick in Pittsburgh here and give a shout out to the punting stealing meme logo from the early days of the Steelers franchise.
Ooh, that's an old one.
It's old. And you do see it around every so often. You'll find that I have a hat with it on it. It's one of my favorite logos as well. And I wish the Steelers would incorporate it more. I understand the Steelers have a very classic all-time logo. I would love to see more of the punting Steely, though, so I can't really be too hard on them. And then one more. I love the Patriots. The actual logo with the Patriot and the tri-corner hat hiking the football. Their throwback. It's really a quintessential logo. It's a very good logo as well. And anytime the Eagles bring out the Kelly Green full-bodied eagle with the head and the wings, also really solid. So probably some bias there being in Pennsylvania, but if we're sticking to hockey, that Vancouver flying skate with that color pattern is just brilliant. That has my vote. The Whalers is almost impossible to say no to. That's why I didn't kind of – I wanted to give Brian the vote there. Because he's absolutely right. Classic logo. And it's too bad we don't see more of that anymore either. Question number six. If you had a rich aunt and she left you $50 million, what are you doing with that money? If it was me, I would want to invest in a team or franchise, most obviously the Penguins.
All right, Robbie, I'm going to get you in on this question too, because I thought this was a fun question. So if I had a rich aunt and she left me $50 million, the first thing I would do, the absolute first thing I would do would be to pay off my student loans. I'm basically using the early portion, a very small portion of this money to pay off all my debts. I'm going to pay off my student loans. I'm going to pay off the car that I recently bought. I am going to become completely debt free with the leftover money because that's still millions and millions and millions of dollars. I would buy a house. I'd buy a house big enough for all of my family members, maybe not just one house, maybe a big plot of land to have maybe small multiple houses connected on one property. And then I'd probably donate a large chunk of it this isn't me being cliche, but I would probably donate a large chunk of it to some of the charities that I support. The biggest one would probably be the Make-A-Wish Foundation. That's a charity that's helped my family, me specifically, a lot when I was younger. So I would donate a large chunk of that to charity after I became debt-free, made sure my all of my immediate family members were taken care of. With $50 million, you could do a lot, and you could set your family up for generations. So my answer might be kind of boring. I wouldn't be investing it in sports franchises or buying Lamborghinis or anything like that. But that's my honest answer. That's what I would do with that kind of money. Robbie, like I said, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. This is a really fun question. So what would you do if your rich aunt left you $50 million?
Yeah, the debt-free thing obviously would be taken care of. The thing is, after that, I'd still have $49 million and like $990,000 left or something like that. I don't have that much debt, but yeah, clear that off the books. That I'd invest some, because I mean, it'd be great to sit on $50 million, but I mean, you invest it, get more out of it, and that $50 million becomes even more down the line. So I mean, invest some of it, build a house pretty much to my specifications. I mean, I guess that'd be the one thing if I could do it. If I had to pick one thing, that's what it would be. The house that I want, and then a vacation somewhere. I don't know where exactly. There's a lot of places I want to go. So I'd take a nice vacation. And after all that, I'd still have lots of millions of dollars left, I hope. And invest it, spend it on more important stuff, give some to charity, and enjoy life. I mean, $50 million wouldn't be, it could definitely do a lot of good for the rest of your life. So if you spend it wisely. So yeah, I clear the debt, build a house, nice long vacation, and then invest, donate, and kind of don't rest on your laurels, just kind of build on it and have a good life, but a productive life.
Question number 7. Reports are that there will be a similar structure with this new front office, meaning there will be likely a president of hockey operations and a general manager tandem. And Brian wants to know, Robbie, do you like that sort of combination with a head of hockey ops / general manager approach?
Yeah, I think that the approach works. It's just you have to have the right people in the roles. I mean, it's easy to look at what just happened and be maybe a little bit wary of what comes next with how it flamed out with Brian Burke and Ron Hextall. But if you have the right people in there, there's no reason it can't work. And any more and more you have a president of hockey ops or president of hockey, whatever title they use, they have most franchises have that kind of two-person tandem with a general manager doing more of the groundwork than the president of the hockey ops does. So yeah, I have no problem with it. It's all about getting the right fit. So it doesn't matter what system you use if you have the wrong guys in there. So hopefully that this front office or this ownership group, they've obviously been taking their time, but hopefully here in the next couple weeks we get a clearer picture. We're recording this on May 15th, so we're already halfway through the month at this point. So let's see what happens in these next few days and weeks here, getting into June and getting the draft and free agency coming up. So yeah, I think the hockey ops GM approach can work. It's more the fit of the guys that you get in those roles rather than the setup of the front office. Thoughts on Taylor, or question 8, thoughts on Taylor Hall and or Connor Garland as a replacement for Jason Zucker if he leaves in free agency? Boston is going to be in all sorts of cap trouble, and Vancouver seems likely to be making some major changes this offseason.
So both of those things, yeah, look like they're going to be happening. Boston, this was the season for Boston, considering they also have somewhat of an aging core, and they, like Brian says, will be dealing with some sort of cap issues as a result of trying to go all in and keeping this core together for as long as possible. And Vancouver, the Canucks can never seem to find stable footing up there in Vancouver. So looking at these two players that Brian mentioned, Taylor Hall and Connor Garland, both players would be good for the Penguins in terms of their win now approach. Looking at Taylor Hall's contract, he is signed through the 2024-25 season. So his cap hit is $6 million for the next two seasons. Taylor Hall, $6 million cap hit through the 2023-24 and 2024-25 season. Taylor Hall is 31 years old, and looking at his numbers, Taylor Hall's 2022-23 season, 61 games played, 16 goals, 20 assists, 36 points. He was a plus 11, and during the 2022-23 playoffs, 5 goals, 3 assists, 8 points in the 7 games played for the winger. He was a plus 4. Looking at Connor Garland, however, like I mentioned, both of these players, if the Penguins were to acquire one of them, I would be happy with either or. But Taylor Hall being 31 years old, maybe not the player he was years ago. Connor Garland, however, I was beating the Connor Garland drum months ago leading up to the trade deadline if Vancouver was willing to go into a fire sale. Connor Garland's 2022-23, 17 goals, 29 assists, 46 points in 81 games played, in 322 career games, 83 goals, 194 points. Looking at Connor Garland's contract, he is signed for 3 more seasons. In the 2023-24 season, he will have a cap hit of 4.95 and a 4.95 cap hit for the following 2 seasons after that. So Garland is signed through the 25-26 season, and his cap hit will be $4.95 million. It would be easier to obviously make the Connor Garland contract work. Connor Garland is only 27 years old, so you're getting a younger winger on a cheaper cap hit. If Vancouver is really likely to blow some things up, I would take Connor Garland over Taylor Hall any day of the week. But if both players were presented to me, I would be fine with either or, considering the Penguins' current win-now stance and trying to maximize what's left of Crosby and Malkin. Question number 9. I'm sure everyone has seen the Ranger fans on social media wanting the Rangers to trade for Mike Sullivan, and we even had a question about that, I believe, from another listener last week or the week before. Robbie, would you trade Mike Sullivan if it meant the return was goaltender Igor Shesterkin?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the one instance where I probably do it, because you're getting, again, we don't know how long Mike Sullivan has left in Pittsburgh. Mike Sullivan could be gone in by Thanksgiving next year if the Penguins struggle out the gate, whereas Igor Shesterkin is going to be in the Vezina conversation for the next 10 years. Yeah, that to me would be a very simple trade to make that way. They can have Mike Sullivan. I love Mike Sullivan and what he's done for Pittsburgh, but if you want to give us your franchise goaltender for Mike Sullivan, buddy, where do I sign? I'll sign tomorrow. I will morph into whoever's making the trade for the Penguins right now and sign it myself. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if that was the deal, no brainer. Do it, sign it, be done with it. Don't even look back. Just sign the deal and give him whatever jersey number he wants, because that solves a big problem for a very small price, an almost unfathomably small price. But yeah, I mean, if that's what they would counter with, screw it. Sign. See you, Mike. Thanks for everything. We'll honor you someday. But yeah, we'll take Igor. Question number 10. Because I love the passion in the food question asked last week, I'm going to ask another one this week. What would your last meal be? I'm going with a smorgasbord of seafood, crab legs, shrimp, scallops, clams, the whole nine yards.
All right, this will be another one for you, Robbie, that I'm going to get you in on. I did not think we would spend like 5 minutes last week talking about summertime foods and burgers and pizza and whatnot, but we did, and Brian obviously loved it, so he's coming back with the final meal you would ever eat. Okay, so I'm going to disagree with Brian. I will eat some seafood, but seafood on the list of like food and food groups and different kinds of ethnic foods and all that stuff, it is very low on my list. It's a rather daunting question if you think about it. It's not something that I think about on a daily basis, what my last meal would be. So I know I'm not waking up the next, I'm assuming I'm not waking up the next day, or I have like 12 hours or whatever. If money is no option, I would take, like, I don't know, five pizzas, give me 5 of everything that I like, 5 pizzas, 5 cheeseburgers, give me, like, big plate of pierogies. Just basically give me all the carbs and all the things that you're not supposed to eat. At this point, Robbie knows that he and I are on that same wavelength of a lot of the foods that we like to eat. So basically, give me all of that. Give me burgers. Give me fries. My family comes from Europe, like Poland, Czechoslovakia, that area of Europe where they emigrated from into the United States. So like pierogies and all sorts of casseroles and really hearty European dishes like that I grew up on, I would absolutely be eating that. So I'll go with a smorgasbord of all that stuff. There's no one thing that I would want. I would want just give me, put me in a room and give me burgers, fries, pizza, pierogies, everything that has a very unhealthy carbohydrate content. I will be fine. That may not be the answer that Brian was anticipating, but that's the answer that I'm going to give. Robbie, it's your last meal. What are you eating for your last meal?
I get so many good options. It's really tough to narrow it down to what it would be. Man, if it's like, again, if appetite and money are no issue, give me pretty much anything. Give me like a perfect pizza with pepperoni. All I need is a thinner crust, sauce, cheese, and pepperoni. Give me obviously a good juicy burger. We went very deep on that last week. And it's just some tacos. I love tacos. I'm a huge believer in tacos. And just give me, just give me as many tacos as I could possibly put down, because man, just hammering down some tacos. And I like seafood, but it would not be a choice for a last meal for me. I do like seafood though, but I also thrown in there a great dish of some homemade pasta with a nice tomato sauce or like a marinara, some of that, some garlic bread. Man, so many great issues for this question, because again, we, as we said last week about our whole burger discussion, like it's easy to say burger, but man, if we're taking the last thing you're ever going to eat, man, there's just so much good food there. Pizza, it would be really hard to say no to. Love tacos, like I said. Man, it'd be really hard to pick one, but yeah, a really good pizza. If I absolutely had to pick one, a really good full pie pizza with pepperoni.
All right. I hope that answer suffices, and I would not be surprised if we get another food question this time next week. So question number 11. Now that we know that the Penguins are staying at the 14th overall selection, Robbie, are you using the pick as trade bait, or are you using it to draft a promising, what is likely a forward, in all honesty? And if you were keeping the pick to draft, is there one prospect or a couple of prospects that you would be targeting at the 14th overall pick?
I think it could very well come down to how the draft shakes out. If you're the Penguins, do you maybe have maybe some deals floating in place in case there's nobody there you like? Or do you kind of play it by ear and see if you can get lucky and one of those top prospects would for some reason fall? I don't know really enough about the prospects to pick who I would necessarily target. But man, if the cookie crumbles in the Penguins' favor and one of those top guys would for some reason fall, man, you'd hate to give up that pick because you've got some real talent in this draft. But if, again, with that talent, that pick, even at 14, becomes just that much more valuable. So if the piece is out there, because remember, the ultimate goal is to win another cup with the Penguins or with this core. So if the pieces are out there that you can ship out that first round pick for a goaltender or a top six winger or a top four defenseman, then I think the conversation changes, because as much talent in this draft, a middle first round pick is still maybe, if you're lucky, a top six forward in the NHL. So again, it's so hit or miss. It's not like the NFL draft. In terms of that, again, it's just so, after the first five picks, it's basically like scratching lottery tickets. You might get lucky and that guy might turn out to be the future franchise player, but at best, maybe you're looking at a top six player, and that is 3 or 4 years down the line. So if the piece is there to make this team better right now, I'd feel okay with shipping out that pick. Question number 12, thoughts on Connor Bedard heading to the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, now that it's been a little while since the NHL draft lottery and the Chicago Blackhawks winning said lottery to draft Connor Bedard at number one overall. I mean, look, personally, like from a straight personal, not even hockey related perspective, Chicago should not have their first round pick, considering all they basically got in terms of punishment for the Kyle Beach sexual assault situation. All they basically got was a $2 million fine. They should not have this draft pick. However, it's done. It's over with. Chicago won the draft lottery, and they are going to take Connor Bedard, whether I say they should or shouldn't. So there's no, you can't change the past. Now, looking at Chicago drafting Bedard, I still don't like it had the Penguins theoretically won that lottery, I would have been head over heels going from Lemieux to Crosby and Malkin to Connor Bedard. The Blackhawks are going to go basically from Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews to Connor Bedard and hope that they can have even more Stanley Cup winning success in the future. Looking at the rest of how the lottery shook out, I mean, looking at teams like Anaheim, Columbus, San Jose, teams that have had success in the past, but I mean, have the Columbus Blue Jackets really ever had that one real bona fide superstar talent? I don't think they have. I mean, and that's coming from a Penguins fan who is in the same division as the Columbus Blue Jackets. So I don't know if I would like Bedard torturing the Penguins for the next 15 years. But seeing a team like Columbus, who I don't believe has ever won the draft lottery, getting a player like Bedard that could change that franchise's fortunes. Anaheim's out of sight, out of mind on the West Coast for me, seeing them only a couple of times a year. They obviously had Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf and had some success in the mid-2000s as well. So the fact that it's the Chicago Blackhawks, one of the original six teams, a storied franchise with a lot of long-term success and recent success, seeing the Blackhawks get it, people are going to say that it's rigged for Chicago. It was rigged for Chicago to win. I mean, I don't think it was rigged. But the optics of the entire situation, given the Kyle Beach situation and the fallout from that, given the fact that Kane and Toews are closer to the end than the beginning, and Chicago very openly tanked for this pick, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, because tanking, that's going to give you the best odds to win the draft lottery, to be the worst team in the league. The Penguins did it for Mario Lemieux. The Chicago Blackhawks openly did it this year for Connor Bedard, and they were the ones rewarded for being the worst team, one of the worst teams in the NHL. So, I mean, that's how the cookie crumbles, as Robbie said earlier. You want a franchise generational superstar, your best chance at doing it is being the worst team in the league to win that draft lottery. Until that sort of changes and that system changes, if it ever does change, this is what's going to happen. So, Connor Bedard is going to be a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, whether we as a collective like it or not, as non-Chicago fans, and there's nothing we can do to change that now. So it is what it is. I hope Connor Bedard comes in and has success right out of the gate, much like recent rookies like Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Alex Ovechkin, all of those players that have been given generational franchise labels. I hope he succeeds on a personal level. I hope that he succeeds, knowing that there's going to be a lot of pressure, obviously, with all of the pomp and circumstance that has come with this Bedard lottery. So I hope he succeeds, and I hope one day he's winning the Stanley Cup. Hopefully it's not against the Penguins, but yeah, sure. I obviously want him to succeed as a player. It's better for the league as a whole if he does. So yeah, props to Bedard. Hopefully he can take the baton and run with it. Question number 13. Do you think there will ever be another situation in sports with the New York Islanders and one-time owner John Spano? Robbie, I had to do some research. This was before my time, and this is your question. But, boy, what a story that was with the Islanders and their troubles in the mid-90s with John Spano.
Yeah, so if you ever want to learn more, there is a 30 for 30 on this topic, and it's absolutely fascinating because it's almost hard to fathom how just, I mean, it just, again, it's probably the perfect franchise for it to happen to, especially, I mean, the Islanders, I mean, they never really, they have bounced back, but that did a lot of damage to that franchise, short-term and long-term. Mike Milbury's involved, which obviously is funny enough. It just, yeah, so look up the 30 for 30 on this if you want to know more. And could it happen again? Oh, man, there's so much vetting that goes on now at all leagues with the owners who are brought in. Again, you have your kind of a group ownership like FSG that owns multiple franchises. I mean, overall, I don't think it'll ever happen again to that extreme, to the point where it's almost like cartoon villain are involved in owning a team. You can have bad owners, obviously. You still have bad owners. I mean, I guess Dan Snyder is incompetent in his own way. He's now selling the Commanders to somebody else. But, I mean, that's probably going to get a 30 for 30 at some point. But truly incompetent owners in sports anymore are the vast minority. It just doesn't happen. There's too much investment involved, too much money involved to just go in and screw everything up. And, like, John Spano, he was basically just an Islanders fan and wanted to own the team. And it just, yeah, it was all a complete joke. Yeah, again, go watch the 30 for 30 because it can go into much more detail than we have time for. It's excellent, and it's bewildering that it got that bad. Question number 14. Watching Jordan Staal playing in these playoffs made me want him back in Pittsburgh even more than when Garrett mentioned him as a potential target this summer. Once again, I'll say bring home our lost son.
Absolutely. I'm still conducting the Jordan Staal to Pittsburgh train. looking at these playoffs so far, Jordan Staal's had a pretty good 2022-23 playoffs. 11 games played, 2 goals, 6 assists, 8 points. He's a plus 6. Looking at the series against the New Jersey Devils, he had 2 assists on May 3rd. He had goals in back-to-back games on May 5th and May 7th. And then he had 2 assists in the May 9th game. He went pointless with a plus 1 on May 11th. So in his last 5 games during the New Jersey series, his presence was certainly felt on the ice. And if he doesn't, we'll see what happens with the Carolina Hurricanes as they move forward in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Maybe Staal does end up re-signing there. But in the case that he doesn't, hey, I'm still conducting this train. It looks like Staal hasn't really lost a step. He's still producing offensively. And it's not like he would be coming into Pittsburgh, you know, bearing the weight of being a number one or number two center, much like how it was when he came into the league all those years ago with the Penguins. So I'm still conducting this train. We had gone a couple of weeks without a mention of Jordan Staal, but his recent success in the Stanley Cup playoffs has rekindled this fire under Brian. And if anyone else wants to join the Jordan Staal train, there is plenty of room, even in the caboose of the train. We can never have enough members to join the Jordan Staal to Pittsburgh train. So I'm still conducting it. We just got to hope, wait, and see what happens with Stahl's contract situation and what happens with the Hurricanes throughout the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Question number 15. Robbie, who is one player that you had high hopes for that never panned out? For Brian, it's between two players. Bo Bennett, and he said in parentheses, a moment of silence for him having such bad injury luck, and Eric Tangrady. Really saw Tangrady as a true power forward for the Penguins. Obviously, it did not pan out. And Brian said, dare I say, Tangrady was set to be another Kevin Stephens. So, Robbie, do you have one player that sticks out? Perhaps it is Bo Bennett, because it's Bo Bennett for me. Bo Bennett and Derek Pouliot. Maybe that's recency bias, but those were two players recently that obviously did not pan out for the Penguins. But I'll turn it over to you, Robbie. Who is the one player that just never panned out for whatever reason?
Yeah, Tangrady is a really good observation there, because when that trade was made, remember, he was part of the Chris Kunitz trade. when that trade was made, he was considered like the sneaky bigger piece of that trade because of what he did, how young he was coming over, that he was going to be a key component of this core group for years to come, and obviously didn't pan out. I don't know how many games he played in Pittsburgh. He bounced around a little bit then. He played in Detroit at one point, and now I do see him pop up on, I think he might still live in Pittsburgh, actually, doing some kind of work. But he was a very big chunk of that trade. Remember, they gave up Ryan Whitney in that trade. Ryan Whitney was considered the future of the Penguins' blue line. This was before Chris Letang really burst onto the scene, and Whitney was a big name. That was a big trade to get Chris Kunitz, and Tangrady was kind of the big prospect piece in that trade that sent Ryan Whitney to Anaheim. So Tangrady is a really good choice. Obviously, Bo Bennett is an obvious answer. Another one I'll point out is Simone Dupre. Showed signs in Pittsburgh before he was traded, and then obviously the concussion issues in Anaheim completely derailed his career and actually ended his career, unfortunately, for him. But Dupre was one that I thought was going to be a future of the Penguins blue line for a very long time as well. So Dupre, obviously, one of those names. Tangrady, really good observation by Brian there, just because how hyped he was when he come over, just never worked out. But guy like Pouliot is a good answer. Sprong, you mentioned him earlier, I think fits that bill as well, along with Bo Bennett. I think Bennett's probably the biggest headliner there, because when he was healthy, he was a very good hockey player. Like, there's no doubt about that. And it's just, he could never stay healthy. And it's really unfortunate, because I think he had the tools to be a Jake Gensel-type scorer in the NHL. Question number 16, our last question for this week's mailbag. Do you want to see more teams do what Vegas is doing next year with broadcasting all local Golden Knights games for free to residents in the surrounding area?
Yes, absolutely. 100% yes. So I had to do some research for this question as well. And for those who aren't familiar with what's happening, the Vegas Golden Knights are one of the teams that are affected by the recent regional sports networks. Specifically, I believe the Golden Knights were affiliated with AT&T Sportsnet, much like the Pittsburgh Penguins are here in the Pittsburgh market. AT&T Sportsnet, Warner Brothers Discovery, however that shakes out, however that the pyramid there works there. But basically, AT&T Sportsnet is going to be shuttered as Warner Brothers Discovery is getting out of the regional sports network game, leaving a lot of markets who broadcast professional hockey, professional basketball, baseball, without a real place to go and broadcast their games. I know I was looking before the Major League Baseball season started. Commissioner Rob Manfred said that the MLB has a contingency plan in place in case that these regional sports networks like AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh, they end up shutting down during the season. So looking at what the Vegas Golden Knights are doing, they announced a multi-year partnership with broadcasting company Scripps Sports. And so Scripps Sports will be able to locally broadcast Golden Knights games for free to people living in Nevada and surrounding states. So this will allow non-nationally exclusive games that aren't on ESPN, primarily ESPN or TNT. Those non-nationally exclusive games will be broadcast through the Scripps company with full distribution on cable, satellite, and broadcast. And so the Golden Knights and Scripps working together, it's basically a direct-to-consumer streaming service, although it's not really, maybe it is, will become a streaming service potentially. Maybe that's going to be the future of how sports are consumed in North America, is perhaps a lot of teams could go the direct to consumer route. And if you pay, I don't know, you pay $5.99 or $6.99 a month, you get access to every single game that of the teams that you follow. You get HD or 4K streams or whatever. You can maybe pay a little bit extra on a tiered system with no ads or something like that. So every game will be broadcast with pregame and postgame coverage with the Vegas Golden Knights and their broadcasting teams, and additional distribution. So games will be broadcast in other states, as Brian mentioned, in Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Utah, and Wyoming. So that's encompassing a large portion, maybe not an incredibly populated portion of the United States, but it's still a large portion of the country that will be able to see Vegas Golden Knights games for free. And, you know, like I said, I'm in favor of it. If the Penguins came out tomorrow and said, you can pay to watch all 82 games for a fee of whatever it is, $5.99, $6.99, you get all games for free, or you get all games for paying this price, and you can even have it with no ads. And instead of ads, maybe there's like a camera. I know ESPN does this for some soccer games. If you have ESPN Plus, there's a camera that you can set up in the arena, and you can watch the ice crew instead of watching ads, and you can watch the in-arena entertainment before the puck gets dropped. So I would not be opposed to that, and I would not be surprised if that is a route that more professional sports teams take over the next maybe 5 to 10 seasons, as these regional sports networks continue to either be phased out or change as the consumer, as us, continue to consume sports content. So a lot of emphasis is being put on streaming networks, and this could be a step in that direction to having the teams that you want to follow. Perhaps you have to pay a little bit of money to see them on your platform of choice, whether it's iPhone, iPad, whatever it is. So, I'm in favor of it. I like what the Vegas Golden Knights and this Scripps Sports are doing. Whether it's the future of sports, obviously that remains to be seen. But as a Pittsburgh sports fan, I'm very intrigued because, as I mentioned, the AT&T Sportsnet, that's the regional sports network that hosts Pirates games and Penguin games, and it looks like they are going to be shutting down operations in the not-so-distant future. So if you live in the Pittsburgh market, if you listen to this podcast, you will be consuming the Pirates and the Penguins perhaps on a completely different network in the not-so-distant future. But that's a conversation for another day, conversation for another time. We got through 16 questions. Thank you again to Brian for sending us 16 questions, as Robbie put it, keeping us in business and allowing us to give you more off-season Pittsburgh Penguins content. For Robbie Noggle, I have been Garrett Behanna. Again, thank you all so much for listening to this edition of the Penscast Mailbag, and we will talk to all of you again this time next week.